Hello, this is the Tor Eternity Delphi Council Debriefings, where the storm has a name. We are your hosts, Lehman, Jay, and Mark. And today we will be talking about the Cyber Papacy Cosm cards. 1 through 10 we should get through. Before that, we got a email, and so we want to read that and to remind everybody, or if this is the first time you're either watching or listening, that you can email us at torgdcd@gmail.com. Send us your emails. We will read them. If there's questions, we'll answer questions. If there's comments, we might comment back. But we do very much encourage you all, the listeners and viewers, to tell us what you think. So this one is called Cosm Card Reviews. So very on topic. And this is by Siskoid. So Siskoid, I'm really liking your episodes of Cosm Cards, their value and usefulness. So let me throw in a couple of related questions your way. The first is perhaps for Jay specifically, since he crafts a lot of his own Cosm cards for public consumption at the Infiniverse Exchange. I use them all, great stuff. My question is, what inspires Jay's boosters and therefore might inspire any Game Master to add Cosm cards of their own making to their stacks? Is it a perceived lack of already available effects, color and style of the Cosm, getting more variety into the deck, or what? And have other hosts experimented with this as well? I find that sometimes with long stays in a single Cosm, the decks can recycle relatively quickly, even with the booster in there. Now that the Law of Vengeance is no more, for example, we're expected to throw out a couple of Pan Pacifica cards related to that. The deck has gotten thinner. It's a shame that we don't have cards relating to the law of relativity to replace them. How have you handled this key change in the game world? So, Jay, what are your reasonings, I guess the first reasonings for crafting your own Cosm cards, which anybody can find on the Infiniverse Exchange on DriveThru RPG?
Yep. Well, I guess exactly what you said in the second part there, that I found running games that we were just cycling through the same 10 cards over and over. And this was back when there was like the Ulysses forums were up. And I remember asking, hey, does someone want to make more Cosm cards? And usually the way these things work for me is I get an idea for one or two of them. I think what started the whole thing off was thinking of an arcane power. I can't remember what I called it now, but it's one of the aisle cards where you can use one of your magic adds to count as a skill. And I just walking home from work, it would pop into my head, like, yeah, that's a cool idea. It'd be nice if someone could make a card. And so I asked people like who could do this, and I even made a list of 10 aisle cards, and no one could or would. And they said, why don't you do it? And I'm like, I don't know how to do it. So eventually I just sort of went and figured things out. And as you can see, because I still usually have the older versions of the cards available, they were really rough at first and have steadily gotten better and better. But yeah, it's usually like the inspiration just comes. Sometimes there's a bit of a theme to it. Like the Cyber Papacy cards, for instance, I use the Seven Deadly Sins. For the Core Earth cards, I used action movie quotes. And the thing is, sometimes you can kind of see, like for Nile or even Pan Pacifica, I might have only really had 6 good ideas and the rest are kind of filler. So the early ones, it's like all good stuff, but I try to cover a little bit of everything and I try to avoid cards that only work for one person, like ones that are only for spellcasters or that sort of thing, or at least give a provision to redraw them. Because one of the things, like one of the truths I've taken from my game is that the worst kind of Cosm card is the Cosm card that sits in your hand and doesn't get played. Mm-hmm. So I want to make them all playable, don't always succeed. But I do also have an optional rule in my home game where they can make a reality roll and potentially draw multiple cards and choose which one they want, so they could kind of tailor it a bit. So it's just looking For things like that. And then sometimes just for fun, like the festive ones are, you know, just kind of silly. I have thought in the future of doing Warzone cards, like West Coast would be all more like Ghost Clan, Idinos, and sort of come up with tailored decks using, like, currently there's 30 cards available for each Cosm if you're including mine. And if I made new ones, maybe there's 40. So that would probably be a bit too much. You do want to have some of them kind of coming up again and again, because we mentioned with Nile last week, suddenly comes up a lot, you know, so you want that to happen. So I would probably, I've been sort of thinking of curating lists of which Cosm cards to use in which areas of each realm, and maybe make a Godnet one. So there's just no time these days, though. So I, yeah, there's not really a particular inspiration. I just sort of think of things that were lacking that I thought were cool, and then kind of build around from there.
Mark, do you have anything about the Cosm cards?
Yeah, so I use the rule of two to help. I don't really do Cosm cards like Jay does. Jay builds the cards out, and that's his shtick and what he does with Infiniverse Exchange, and that's his thing, and he does it really well. I haven't taken on that aspect, but what I've done is used the rule of two in the idea of when I do a mission, or I'm trying to run a mission, I like to try and include, because Torg Eternity, the wonder of Torg Eternity is the meshing of two dissimilar things together, like Isle and Cyber Papacy, and throwing those into the mix and seeing what comes out of that. And I like the idea of how do those Cosm cards, because you've got, if you put the rule of two together where you have two Cosms, now you have 40 Cosm cards if you're using all 20 for each of the two decks, 60 if you're using all of J's, and that are available in that to throw out there, plus how do those interact with the world laws. And when you take, you know, like in that example, Cyber Papacy world laws with Eilish Cosm cards, how do those interact? Is there any flavoring, or can you be creative with how, you know, for example, or Living Land, like suddenly, you know, you get, instead of a T-Rex shows up, what, you know, if you've got Living Land and Cyber Papacy melded together, instead of a T-Rex, could you have some other thing that's more Cyber Papacy show up to play off of that? And so I like to take the Cosm cards with the rule of two and change them that way. Wonders are a great example in the Living Land, where you can do anything you want with Wonders, and when you mash the two realities together, you can make really unique Wonders if you use the world laws from both realities to feed into, you know, something like that. But, you know, it's, you mentioned, Siskoid, you mentioned removing cards, or that we're supposed to remove cards. Well, yeah, you could remove them, or because it's your Cosm, you could keep them, and you could do it however you want. As an example, in Pan Pacifica, I really like the Contagion, and I like the themes and the way that plays out within the realm of what Pan Pacifica is. And I think that you can have some really cool storylines if you keep that in the mix. I intend at some point, if I get enough time and inclination and whatnot, to do something along the lines of exploring the what if of how the cure came about, right? And the what if of what happens, you know, Taiwan essentially is containment right now, right? The contagion's all on Taiwan. Well, what happens? What happens if suddenly the contagion is no longer contained on Taiwan? How does that even happen, right? And do play that storyline out. Or even, I think, longer term, what would happen if the contagion mutated and the cure that Kanawha has for this, that's gotten it, you know, tamped down, suddenly becomes obsolete because now we've got, you know, Kamigaze type 2 or whatever you want to call it. And now you've got this other thing out there that Kanawha is scrambling around like everybody else. And how does that even play out? So I think you can do it how you want to do it in your Cosmverse, because it's your Cosmverse. If you don't want to throw them out, don't. to Jay's point, you know, when he was talking about doing the cards and nobody wanted to do the cards or would do the cards, and somebody said to him, well, why don't you do the cards? And he said, well, I don't know how to do that. None of us knew how to do that when we started. I mean, my first stab at it was rooting out a Rorsch, and I threw that up on because I wanted to do missions. I like missions, the adventures, and adding content with make the missions something that was unique. And so I started putting threats that, because I thought there weren't enough threats. So I started building threats or other things that you could reuse. Just do it. Just go jump in there and do it. The first one or two that you do, yeah, they're going to be rough around the edges, but just jump in there and do it. And that's how you learn how to do it. Nobody's going to, you know, oh, that's so awful. No. It's just, you just learn that way. And that goes into the too many cards thing that Jay was like, if there's 60 cards out there, you don't have to use them all. You can pick and choose. And the ones you don't like, pull them out. There are cards that I don't like that I don't want to try and figure out how to put into the game. So I pull them out so they don't come up. But if you like so other cards, like if you're all about dino attacks and you want to have a heavy dino, double the number of dino attacks in there, that's fine too. Nothing says you don't have to do that. You can't do that because it's your Cosm first.
Yeah, to add with that, for myself, I haven't made Cosm cards for the Cosms that exist in Torg Eternity. I made my first project was just in the Infiniverse was just some archetypes. But then my second one was much larger, Paraverse, which is kind of my own Cosmverse that I introduced, which was kind of a bridge between classic Torg and Torg Eternity, and based off of my home game, my home campaign, in which the Aztec Empire, which I named Azteca, so there wouldn't be a Nile Empire and an Aztec Empire. So Azteca actually came to being because my Storm Knights failed that mission, that book. And so I made up at that time it was 10 Cosm cards, so I made up 10 Azteca Cosm cards. Other times, like, because I actually have my Maritica is actually its own thing that, again, is more classic Torg, where it is Living Land and Nile Empire. I took a specific 5 from Nile Empire and a specific 5 from Living Land for that. But I would agree completely with Mark that with the Pan Pacifica booster, we have, like, now 25 cards. I think we took had 10, we added 10, but yeah, then instead of
it
having
should be the right
five
amount.
Instead of adding the 5 destiny cards, we did the quote unquote replacement cards that were both taking away the Law of Vengeance cards as well as the infection cards. We didn't take away the like the actual Jiangji and the Yokai, those mutation cards.
Yeah.
Those stayed in there. To do kind of a reversal of what Mark said, in that home campaign I did, the other thing that succeeded was the Miracle of Sacramento, I think it was. And so Kanawa had established an area on the west coast of the United States, and that one specifically did not have infected. So I took away the infected from there. When I had when my Storm Knights played in that area, there were no infected cards. And when they played in the Pan-Pacifica area, then there was. And as Mark pointed out, Taiwan is filled with infected, filled with the different mutations and stuff. So those cards could be ones that you bring in when you're in those areas and you remove when you're out. And the last thing I want to, I guess, suggest or offer is think about the law of acquisition. Acquisition is usually getting something, and the way that the law is written, it's more of an exchange of something. So just change the law of acquisition a little bit and have Kanawa you know, the Darkness device and the High Lord bring in new laws or swap out laws where needed. The law of, I think it was rationality, was in order to like help stave off a Rorsch a little bit, but maybe they only need them in these certain Stele zones, and in these other ones the law of vengeance is more appropriate. So I would go for, in my own Cosmverse, having one of the cool things about Pan Pacifica is they can change things and just do it that way. So I definitely am not one that I'm going to throw out five cards. I'm going to use those five cards in some way, shape, or form if they fit the story that I'm telling. So hopefully that gives you some food for thought, and we do thank you for writing in. And again, do write us at torgdcd at
gmail.com. I did remember one thing, because he did mention about inspiration, and I've been looking at this while we're talking. This one, specifically the Lust card, specifically because some of my players are just addicted to constantly playing the Romance card, even when it is not appropriate, and just to give me grief, so I specifically went out of my way to make a Cosm card for them to spend romances on, to get rid of them, basically. So that was some inspiration there. And I think also Siskoid did himself recently release some cards as well in the Infiniverse Exchange.
Ah, okay. So yes, do check out the Infiniverse Exchange. There's a lot of stuff on there that I think is pretty good. There is always the thing of what might be good for a specific table or a group of different tables. Appropriate there don't necessarily are just widely wanted or needed on the grand scheme of, you know, a global production. So the Infiniverse, I think, is a great place for that. Like, I would not expect everybody to play in my Cosmverse, but some people want something that doesn't have the Delphi Council, so there is an option for those people and stuff. So,
and for those of you who shop on the Infiniverse Exchange and you get the stuff that is on DriveThruRPG, I highly recommend that you leave feedback on the stuff that you've downloaded. Okay, I don't know what it is, but people generally speaking don't, and you're doing your fellow gamers a disservice by not leaving something on the stuff that you've downloaded, whether you liked it, didn't like it, whatever, because as an author, I can tell you, we read all of the stuff that people leave. So if you're like, I liked this part and I didn't like this, the things that you didn't like, we would like to know so that we can change them. Otherwise, we're going to keep doing it that way. So if you leave feedback, people are reading it, and it's the cheapest and easiest way to say thank you to somebody who's written something you liked. Mm-hmm. Just go in there and leave a sentence. Loved it. This is great stuff. You won't be dissatisfied. Period. Done. Boom. So leave feedback.
Okay. So let's move into the Cosm cards for Cyberpapacy. So number one is God in the Machine. Play when using technology connected to the Godnet, most machines in the Cyberpapacy, even appliances. The interaction may draw the authorities. The Storm Knights gain 1-3 possibilities based on the severity of the response. Game Master's call. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on God in the Machine?
It's a very good card. It reinforces the toaster is listening lines from Cyberpapacy. And it does say may, so it doesn't necessarily have to force something. And sometimes there might be nothing coming, and the players get so paranoid they screw themselves over. And even that's worth a possibility, right? But yeah, it is one of those things where it is a variable amount of possibilities. So you have a lot of freedom as GM what you want to do. You could have Cygoyles flying up above and watching them, but not interfering directly. You could have church police show up 20 minutes later and then slowly start trying to follow them and figure out where they are. You could have an inspector, you know, tailing them. Or you could just have a host slam down, you know, crush their car and just start blasting. It's kind of up to you. So you can really tailor it to what's going on, because like Dino Attack, it's always a dinosaur and they're rarely subtle, but this could just be someone following you, you know?
Mark, your thoughts on God and the Machine.
Yeah, this is like a lot of the other ones that we've gotten that give you a 1 to 3 possibilities on based on whatever you encounter, the difficulty they're in. And credit to Liam and for his approach on that one. It's not necessarily what you throw at them as it is how hard your Storm Knights have to struggle against what you throw at them. And I love that concept. That was a paradigm shift for me on these cards. Thank you, Liam. Because I was always going, okay, well, this should be a 3 possibility challenge for them. And it wasn't taking into account, well, where are they at? But it's a good card. It's the Dino Attack of the Cyber Papacy.
That can be other stuff, right?
Yo, it sure can, but the toaster is listening.
Yeah. No, I like this one, as Jay said, because it can be a Dino Attack, but it can be just some guy finds out your information 3 weeks later. You know, it just be whatever. There'll be a response at some point, but you as the game master get to completely determine what that response is. So
or problems hacking something. If you're running through the Godnet, you get, now you're, Lehman will hate this, but now you got to run a chase through the Godnet because Jack Priests are coming after you or something like that. They wouldn't otherwise. And they do fly.
Okay, let's move on to number 2, La Resistance. The Resistance comes to the hero's aid. This may bring allies to fight, distract church police from pursuing the Storm Knights, or provide information, items, or other resources to the team. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on La Resistance?
This is a very good card. It is very open-ended for the players this time. Gives them a lot of options that they can do, but there is always the potential danger that this will burn your connection with the Resistance, depending on what you do afterwards. Because if you use this to get to one of their safe houses and you lead a bunch of church police there and get a bunch of Resistance members killed, that will probably have some kind of ripple effect later. So just keep in mind, they're helping you, so you might need to help them back.
Mark, your thoughts on La Resistance?
Like it. It's very much a great Cyber Papacy flavored card, simply because it's pulling out La Resistance. You have your, whoever it happens to be show up, or in. I kind of look at it as a very generic whatever you need kind of card. That, when it's played, hey, we need the MacGuffin, or we kind of don't know where the MacGuffin is or the next step. Let's play La Resistance, and a contact kind of gives us the piece of information we didn't have or whatever. It could be a non-combat or a combat card, in that, if you're getting your butt kicked by church forces and you really need some help and you drop this down, all of a sudden La Resistance shows up and the tides of battle swing a little bit. Out of combat, like I said, it's a kind of whatever you need card, as long as you can make it make sense. And in that sense, it feels almost like a little bit Nile Empire, in that, when you play it, it's going to feel very convenient that this is what happens. But that, it's a Cosm card. You decided you needed this thing, and so you played a card. So you're going to have to let that slide in the Cyber Papacy, just because you played the card because you wanted a thing. Well, you're going to get a thing, and it's going to be very appropriate, or, it's going to be like, oh, well, that's convenient. Whatever. Look, this is off you go.
I like it too. It's one that it brings in the flavor, and it's another more open-ended card. You can get anything from, say, a password that you needed to a full squad of, completely armed Resistance members to help you fight off that host. So it's just a pretty cool Swiss Army knife card. So let's move to card number 3, Conjunction. Strong magical energy resonates through the area for the remainder of this scene. The law of heretical magic is negated. If there are no spellcasters in the group, discard and draw a new Cosm card. So, Jay, your thoughts on Conjunction?
This card is kind of meh. It's, like, the best art, I think, of one of the cards. But, again, I don't really like it when it's just if you're a spellcaster, although this one does have the saving grace of if there's no spellcasters, get rid of it. The reason I was like checking stuff is I always get heretical magic in one true way mixed up, like which is which. And as far as I can tell, the law of heretical magic is just saying that if you take a mishap while casting a spell, you take an additional 1 BD shock. Now, I thought the demons popping up was part of that, but it's not like in the rules for it anyways. So all you're really dodging with this is getting more screwed over on a mishap. I mean, getting screwed over on a mishap is bad, but the odds of it happening are pretty slim. So for this to be your Cosm card, not really the best in my opinion. And it does, I mean, it does negate it for everybody. So if you are an entire team of mystics, then sure, it might be good. But otherwise, there's a lot better.
Mark, your thoughts on Conjunction?
So we're going to get to card number 4, which is heretical magic, coming up next. But it does say that if you have a mishap while casting a spell, it summons a minor demon on the card. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this one, Conjunction, it's, you know, strong magical energy resonates through the air, the remainder of the scene. To me, if you're going to play this card, you need to play this at the beginning of a scene, not at the end of the scene. I might tell you you can't play it at the end of the scene because then it shows up and it goes away. But I don't know why I would do that necessarily, because this is like a good for the players card. Yeah. So from the standpoint of a game master, you might want to make sure that the players know it's only good for the length of the scene they're in. And if you're at the end of the scene and they're getting ready to drop it down because they think it's, you might want to not be a dick and tell them, yep, you played it. Okay, let's do the card thing. Scene's over. And they're like, well, hey, wait a minute. Because now they're out of a Cosm card for the act. I do like the fact, and I think I may have to go back and figure out which cards to do this on, but I love the idea that this says if there are no spellcasters in the group, discard it and get a new Cosm card, because as Jay pointed out earlier, it sucks to have a Cosm card in your hand and you know you're never going to play this. There is absolutely zero opportunity to play this with the group that's here in the mission that we're on. Why do I this? Okay. So I like the card other than that fact, because it does zero out heretical magic, which sucks if you're a spellcaster. So yeah, this is not a bad card. It's not a great card. It's an okay card.
Yeah. I agree with everything that's been stated. It is also kind of a weird thing, 'cause I think, a certain realities have more of the cards that are alternately discard this card and draw a new card, which is good when they're a little niche like this, but then as the email stated, you even have less cards in your rotation. So it's kind of it's good that it's there, but I like the solid cards that anybody can use, because then you don't have to worry about discarding. So that's kind of the main downside. It's niche. Yes, you can draw a new card, that's good, but then by doing so, you're cycling through your 20 cards, and now you only have your 19 cards. And then if you're looking at our next card, which is also one, then you might go down another card and only have 18 cards. So let's move on to card number 4. As Mark said, it is Heretical Magic, which also, the conjunction says, the law of heretical magic is negated. So as a game master and or a table, you're going to have to look at the world law of heretical magic and this Cosm card of heretical magic and determine, does this conjunction nullify both or only one? So heretical magic, play immediately when drawn. The first player character who rolls a mishap while casting a spell summons a minor demon. See Torg Eternity. All Storm Knights gain two possibilities after the demon is defeated. If there are no spellcasters in the group, discard and draw a new Cosm card. So, Jay, Heretical Magic, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's Tharkold I'm thinking of, but I could have sworn there was something in the text in the rule book about demons as
Tharkold
well.
Tharkold does have it, and then later, yeah. I know for a fact, later the Cosm card was added because people were forgetting to have the Techno Demon show up on a mishap.
Right. So, but I guess, yeah, unfortunate naming. This is okay. I mean, it's, again, it gets ignored if you don't have any spellcasters, so that's fine. It only targets player characters, so that's unlike some of the Isle ones, which will equally affect anyone. This only gets the players. As far as what Lehman was saying earlier, I would probably personally rule if someone played Conjunction, you would ignore the effects of this for that scene, and then it would still be active. Like, it wouldn't cancel it completely. It would just, while the conjunction is going on, then Malrose.
So this is just sitting there in the, background waiting.
Waiting.
Getting angrier and angrier.
Yeah,
it's okay. It's a fairly decent possibilities. Minor demons are dangerous if they go first, but if they go second, they're not that tough. As a GM, though, it depends on how you introduce the demon, because if it just appears in a ball of fire in front of them is very different than if it possesses a kid over there, right? So that, keep in mind how your adventure's going and how, and like any of these cards that adds enemies, how much time you want them to spend on it. But it is always going to give each person two possibilities, so you probably want to make them work for it.
Mark, your thoughts on Heretical Magic?
So, yes, this absolutely, if you want to play it, rules as written, says that this is for player characters. And it also says that if you don't have a spellcaster in your group, you should discard it and draw a new Cosm card. However, if you wanted to modify this a little bit and just like some other Cosm cards affect characters, anybody. If you wanted to allow it to affect anyone instead of just player characters, Storm Knights, then you could just let this be in play because the players never know when they're going to run into a spellcasting NPC. And if you're running into a spellcasting NPC, because it doesn't say only, I mean, if you keep it as a player character, it's only the good guys. If you open it up to everybody, then when they are attacked by, you know, a white witch or a demon or somebody
else.
What
are they doing to be attacked by a white witch?
Well, they might be
using
alternative forces. Yeah, you never know. But suddenly someone else is casting spells against them and they mishap and now there's a demon showing up. I mean, this could be a more interesting card because there's no way to dispel it. You can mute it for a scene with a conjunction, right? But it's there. Play immediately, boom, it's on the tabletop for the rest of the act. So it could make life much more spicy.
Yeah, I tend to, as much as I've talked about, you know, changing Dino Attack and having them be something if your game is limited on time to, you know, wrap it up in a different encounter or something like that. The demon summoning ones I always bring up, and I've had sometimes a couple of these pop up at one time where, like, in Tharkold, what we just mentioned, there is the rule and then there is the card, and I had somebody who had the card, so I used that one time, but then they did it normally, so they actually summoned two techno demons in that one, so it was a very fun fight for me as a game master. But no, I kind of like it. It does have the discard and draw a new card, which I'm
him and hawing over just because it does reduce it, but I am glad that if you don't have it, so maybe I'd do Mark's thing where I would just allow, if I knew other things coming up had magic, that I would be like, okay guys, go ahead and just still use this, it could come into play, and they're still going to get a couple possibilities, because if the enemy summon that demon, that demon's not necessarily only going to attack that enemy, so that could be fun as well. So let's move on to card number 5, Malrose Wrath. Play when your hero or an ally fails a casting test with magic or miracles. So this is both magic or miracles. The caster suffers 4 shock instead of the usual 2. All other allies within 20 meters suffer 2 shock. All of those affected gain 1 possibility. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on Malrose Wrath?
Notable in that this one does not allow you to discard it and draw a new one. So, odds are fairly good that you will have at least a spellcaster or miracle worker, or at least be chumming around with one in a Cyberpapacy adventure, but it's not guaranteed. So this could very much be a dead card, because it is just hero or ally. Mm-hmm. It doesn't affect Cyberpapal forces. So this is actually the card I was thinking of when Mark was talking about your buddies casting stuff and everything. But this is probably one I would more change to that. But I guess it doesn't make sense then, because it is Malrose Wrath. This is probably the card I would be most likely to cut just altogether out of the deck, unless I had like an all caster party or mixture of the two, because it's very likely, you know, at least one caster or miracle worker in the party. Otherwise I'd probably cut it, because it's just a dead card in most people's hands.
Mark, your thoughts on Malrose Wrath?
It's kind of it's not a tremendous card. It's only going to get you a possibility. Or everybody affected a possibility, assuming anyone is affected. It affects your side only, but as the name says, Malrose Wrath, right? And I think it's appropriate, and you need to put a little flavor into it when it's triggered. I would like to see it a little more juicy as far as the effect goes, because honestly, 4 shocks, not that bad. 2 shock, I mean, you just pushed the fatigue button. If it was like a wave that triggered fatigue, that might be more appropriate, given, you know, your dwarf in armor that has fatigue as a feature. Now he's taken more, you know, it affects people a little bit different. I mean, I might all go all the way up to a wound to the caster and a BD of shock to everybody else, just to be, and maybe bump it 1 to 2 possibilities. I don't know. It's just, it's not that great a card. So you get one possibility out of it, but it doesn't do that much either. So I guess, you know, balance, sure. It's just meh. The biggest thing though is you got to remember you have this, because it isn't a play immediately. It's not on the table and then gets triggered when something happens. You have to play it when you or your ally fails a casting test, which means you have to remember you have it in your hand, and somebody goes, oh, I'm just going to take the shock, and you're in the heat of battle and you're planning your steps and you go next, and then you forget about it, and you know you didn't get to play it and trigger that. Everybody's like, well, we could have taken 2 shock, that's easy, and then we get a possibility, and you forgot.
I agree with Mark. I wish this had a little more bite, and I would rather it have 2 possibilities with that more bite, whether it's I would even went further and say that the caster takes 2 wounds and everybody else takes a wound who gets 2 possibilities.
I'd be, hey, let's do that. I'm good.
Something like that. Yeah. But again,
make it so.
2 and 4 shock to me isn't much at all. There's so many different ways to negate that. Wounds are a little bit harder, or even like a make some roll or take a wound and then get, you know, 2 possibilities or something. Or
reality,
you know,
check,
a BD with a shock, but on the explosion you take a wound. You know, just something a little more meaty. But otherwise, it's decent, but it's not It's not one that, like, as a player or as a game master, if I see, I'm either like, yeah, as a player, or he as a game master. You know, right. It's just like, okay, card was played. So let's move on to card 6, Heightened Paranoia. Play in a populated area. The people there are on high alert. Intimidation, persuasion, and streetwise tests are hard, which is a -4 penalty, until a glory card is played in that area. A mishap when using any of these skills alerts the church police. All players gain 1 possibility. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on Heightened Paranoia?
My players love playing this card. They play it immediately as soon as we start. They don't care about the possibility. They just want to cause each other problems. So usually it'll be as soon as someone goes to talk to somebody. It's like, hey, we need some information. Bam, I'm paranoid. And he's like, why?
You're calling me out, Jay.
But yeah, so it's been a lot of fun. It does only give 1 possibility, and it's kind of weird because it remains until a glory. So it's way longer lasting than a lot of other cards for only 1 possibility. But, I mean, the odds are good there will be a glory at some point. Whether you're there or not, I guess, is the real question. But I like it. It's very flavorful. And the shenanigans make it, even if it's not a huge mechanical reward, it's still a fun card to play for players and GMs.
So, Mark, your thoughts on Heightened Paranoia?
I love this card. This is, in my opinion, this is one of the most flavorful Cyber Papacy cards going, and the art on this one is really good too. I love this card because it makes you're the majority of what goes on in the Cyber Papacy is snoop and poop, and you have to find stuff and figure things out, and there's a lot of interaction, and this makes the face job so much harder. And it's a fantastic card, and it persists until glory gets there, which is another thing that I love about this. I 100% think this ought to be a 2 possibility card, just because of the, even if, let's say, you played it and then the very first roll you got a glory off and it goes away, that's fine, but the angst and consternation that the party is going to go through just thinking about what could be with this -4 on all these skills that you've just jacked up, and the church police are looking for you. I would have more street beater patrols out. I would have more drones out. They see more cameras whirring and picking up on them and paying. I mean, just everything going on. It's Heightened Paranoia, right? People don't want to talk to them, i.e. the -4. Play it up. It's fantastic. And I might even haven't, but I might even let this persist across acts if they hadn't gotten a glory. You might have to think about, if you're going to do that, maybe not having it when they do another act, the next act, not having it in the Cosm deck to be pulled out. Or if you want to really jack them up, have it in there, and if it comes out again, stack, because now they got -8. Think about how hard that would be. Oh my gosh, that would be just mind-numbing, but it'd be fantastic.
So I like this card, as I was alluding to with Jay. I have played this at the moment that we got into a highly populated area in which
people
already did not really like the idea of these outsiders coming in, and then played it to give us the -4 when I don't really think we have any face, like totally face characters.
Nope.
Like, my character has persuasion. It might be, I think I actually bought my charisma up to a 7, and then I might have like a point or 2 in persuasion, and I became the face who had to deal with my own card, but it wasn't like played that way. But no, this is a great thing. The group on Wednesday, the stream, we love playing these at the absolute quote unquote wrong time. It's kind of like the tribalism card in Living Land, where we played when we met outsiders that we absolutely needed to convince them not to go that way, but to go this other way. You know, it just adds to the tension. I think it brings out that, so that's pretty cool. Let's move on to card number 7, Denounced. A non-player character is mistrustful of another player character. He watches closely and is suspicious of everything. Unless convinced otherwise by the end of the scene, he betrays, denounces, or reports the accused. Your hero and the targeted Storm Knight gain 2 possibilities. So, Jay, your thoughts on Denounced?
I like it. It's kind of in the same area as the heightened paranoia is, but just with one person. Now, I guess it doesn't necessarily have to be a specific non-player character. Much like a lot of the Pan Pacifica Law of Intrigue kind of gives the GM carte blanche to maybe add an NPC if there wasn't one already. But usually a player will play this when there's a strong NPC that's been introduced in an adventure. So they'll be expecting that person. And most of the time it should be that person. But every once in a while you hit them with the old Spanish Inquisition. You know, someone totally different. It's good because it's also more flavorful. It's not like, oh, you're going to be attacked. It's good that they will denounce you. And you do have a chance to prove yourself to them. And so hopefully if you, whatever mission you're on, if you do it well and you take this NPC's feelings into account, it won't be an issue, but it might be. But it's decent possibilities too. It's like a little bit of everything.
So, Mark, your thoughts on Denounced?
I like this card too. This is another one that's got a lot of cyber papacy feel to it, because heightened paranoia kind of leads into Denounced, right? It doesn't say who, though, which character the NPC is mistrustful of. It's kind of vague. So you can, GMs, you can allow the player who's playing it to indicate, or they just play it and you say, okay, I got this covered. And now you're dictating, but keep in mind that you're dictating who's going to get the possibilities at that point. So you have to kind of, do you want to let the player say, well, I want this to be the dynamic going on? Because they might think that they have a way to mitigate that, and they've thought of, you know, this person's going to announce this person, and I'm going to help them with this, and then we get 2 possibilities, and it doesn't really affect us. Boom. If you're handing out possibilities, it needs to have an effect. It can't be just a, here's a card, give me free possibilities. I mean, sometimes it works out like that, but most of the time, it needs to have a game effect. So I would almost always dictate where it goes, I would like it to go this way. We'll say, okay, just put that on the table and we'll see how this plays out. And now you've got this element of, I don't know how this is going, in the air, which always makes players a little antsy, because the unknown, they've got the, you know, they know what they can do and they've got this plan, but now there's this element of unknown in there, and maybe you know that they're getting ready to meet the perfect NPC that has a reason to betray them, but could also go the other way and is kind of there to do the whole, you got to convince them, etc. The 2 possibilities on this one, I kind of would like to see Denounced and heightened paranoia switch as far as the value, because this is just really, it's one player. You got to roll. If you got a good, if it happens to be the face that gets it, or you got a good persuasion or whatever, you make a good roll and boom, you got the possibilities. No big deal. So,
yeah, I tend to agree with both of you. The only thing that I'll add or not really even add, just enforce, is I do like that. There's a time limit. It's a slow burn card. It's not just a, they denounce you. It's a, there's build up. So as you both were saying, you don't have to say who it is that's going to denounce you, but you might, as a game master, just have somebody watch. And anytime somebody makes an off comment against the cyber papacy or whatever,
which, know, they will,
they're marking it down and they're getting ready to send their report in, and you know, so the denouncing could happen without the players knowing who did it, And if they are like, hey, wait, we didn't have time to, you know, convince them otherwise, you could bring out your whole list as a game master of these are all the things that you did and said, you know, to get you that way. So that's what, you know, all, if you would have just had a different way of approaching things, you knew the card was in play. So this could be, I don't know if you think it's like a sneaky game master trick, but I think it's pretty much written in black and white on the card. So. moving on to card number 8, Wanted. Play after committing a crime against the Cyber Church, including battle against church forces, the church police send a strike team to attack sometime this act. All Storm Knights involved gain 1 to 3 possibilities after the strike team is repulsed, depending on the strength of the strike team. So, Jay, your thoughts on Wanted?
I mean, this is another one of those Dino Attack style cards, except it has a trigger, so that trigger has to happen, but the players are in very much control of said trigger, so if they want it to happen, it will happen. And committing crimes against the Cyber Papacy is almost guaranteed in every adventure in the Cyber Papacy. But I have had players just start like smashing up stores and stuff just to play this. again, like any of these, it's like how long is it going to take to do the fight? But it is during the act, so it could happen at any point. And because information travels slowly in the Cyber Papacy. Or rather, it travels quickly and then sits in a folder in Babel Central for a long time until someone looks at it. You know, so they might not get to it right away, but they might just end up being reinforcements to something the players are already doing. It could even be something like if they're planning on sneaking into a spot, that these reinforcements show up and just warn everybody that it's coming. You know, there's a lot you can do. So it's pretty much the average one of those cards.
Mark, your thoughts on Wanted?
So this one is a fresh wound for me because it came up last night on the stream. And it was... Jay says Jay's absolutely correct in that data travels quickly and then percolates slowly into action. Because they have to print that out, put it in a folder, and then it sits in the bottom. It gets piled up, and then that gets carried over to another monk who picks them up and then enters them back into the system for the people who have to act on them. And then they do stuff with it once they get it. It gets through their work queue. So, yeah, the stuff sifts slowly unless it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And last night, without giving the game away, somebody walked into an encounter with a named NPC and a church official, and just cast lightning bolt and fried the church official out of hand. And then someone said, I think a crime against the church has just been committed, which it had, and there was a scout drone in the air, which was recording everything. And so at a later time, in the middle of split the party, some people were in the Godnet and some people weren't, some Jack Priest showed up in the Godnet with a host overhead. And so everybody was engaged, and it was a big deal. Because, you know, when you've got heretical magic, they call out the strike team that just like, we got to go deal with that right now. And so they did. Wanted is a Dino Attack card, but it is, and as stated, it's got a trigger. But if you do it right, it's got a really nice flavor to it. And it's a great Cyber Papacy card purely because you it's cause and effect. You did a thing and a thing happened because you did a thing, not just like Dino Attack in the Living Land is just up dinosaur, right? Here you committed a crime against the church, and now some people are here to exact the retribution for that. So something that you don't have to do this, but it's probably a good idea to keep the strike team that's deployed in line with the crime you're saying they're responding to. So, you know, you're not going to have, you know, 4 Cygoyles and a host show up when somebody's jaywalking. But, you know, if they're committing a smash and grab, you know, 1 street beater per Storm Knight is not going to show up for that. So, you know.
Yeah, I agree. This is dino attack with a trigger and a little more flexibility, I think. It's been a while since we actually did dino attack, but I think even though we said we would prefer to just put it in the act when we want, the language in it might not be as clear as this one. So this one does give you the whole act as a game master to figure that stuff out, and it is a trigger instead of just a surprise. Moving on to number 9, mandatory upgrade. An ill-time upgrade or glitch causes a piece of Tech 26 technology to malfunction and fail for the remainder of the scene. If the item belonged to an ally, your Stormite and targets gain 1-3 possibilities based on the severity of the loss. So, Jay, your thoughts on mandatory upgrade?
So at first, this can seem like it's not that good because same situation. We might not have any Tech 26 gear. We're in the Cyber Papacy. None of us are Cyber Papacy, but I can't discard it. But the thing is, it does say any character. So like a piece. So on anyone. So this can affect like Cyber Papacy agents, that Inquisitor that's chasing you. their car, you know, whatever, right? So this is probably almost always going to be useful in the Cyber Papacy, unless you're like way out in the boonies fighting like demon cultists or something like that. It's almost always going to be good. And it's kind of like a setback, essentially, because it's just cause a glitch or an upgrade. There's a malfunction of some kind, and it keeps failing for the rest of the scene. So if you play this on some Inquisitor's arm-mounted like laser gun, then like their god beam or whatever, it doesn't work at all for the rest of the scene. Whether that reboot cybernetics miracle will work on it or not is kind of up to you. But yeah, so it's pretty useful. It'll come in handy. It's almost a get out of jail free card, but not quite.
Mark, your thoughts on mandatory upgrade?
So let me just say that Pierre's still going to have a problem next scene. Because this got played on Pierre's power sword.
Does anybody have Tech 26 stuff? Oh, yes, I do. It's my melee weapon. My main melee weapon. A sacred GWI rapier of God. Yeah, guess what? That doesn't work.
And then due to things outside of Liam's control, he could not play with us last night, and we played through a scene that got played on. So no, that you possibilities were awarded. Mm-hmm. You're getting affected next scene. So hey, whatever. But yeah, this is another really good Cyber Papacy themed card that really to me communicates the idea and the feel of the Cyber Papacy. This is played on either someone in the Storm Knight's crew, or it can be played on an enemy, a threat. And if you play it on the threat, you don't get any possibilities because you've disabled something that the threat had, and so that's its own reward. So, okay, fine. If you play it on your side, if there's only one piece of Tech 26 gear, as in the case of our stream, Pierre was the only one, had the only thing, then okay, that's easy to determine. But if you've got multiples, the GM gets to call, because the GM's going to dictate how many possibilities you get. It may be a random thing that happens. That's up to you, because it doesn't say who determines. The player playing the card might say, well, that thing fails. The only thing that I would say is, as a GM, if you're going to play this at my table, it's got to be something that has an effect. It can't be like if you're a drone jockey and you have 4 hard hologram emitters and you're only using one of them right now, you can't have one of the other ones that's dormant. Oh, that's an upgrade, and let me give me my possibility for that, and I'll just put that in my pocket and I never use it anyway. That doesn't work. It's got to be something that has an impact on the character that's getting an upgrade. Like in Pierre's case, he's a melee striker, and his main melee weapon has just been zeroed out. that's significant because he's a heavy hitter for the team, and you just took that bat out of his hand. So that's going to, you know, you're going to get two or three possibilities for that, but it's got to have an effect, because if it doesn't, there's just no point to me.
I'll add on that I almost see this as a temporary law of decay, where in that one you get to choose something that goes away, and based on it, it's one to, you know, three possibilities. This only affects one thing, and it's temporary, but it's a similar type thing. And so, yeah, I like law of decay. I think that's very flavorful. I also think that this is very flavorful because the person who played it on me wasn't a he. I'm playing this on you. He was like, hey, does anybody have Tech 26? Oh, I do. Hey, you want, you know, some possibilities? What's it do? It destroys your Tech 26, or you know makes it not work. Sure, why not? Just, you know, throw it on me, see what happens. Okay, my main weapon goes away. Okay, I'll figure out something to do.
See, but I like this better than the Living Land one, because it in the Living Land one, it destroys it.
Right,
and
right.
It's gone. This just turns it off, which it's kind of, people are reluctant to do the destroys part, even though as a game master, if I were to destroy your power sword, we would figure out a way that after that time frame, you got another power sword, right? That's only fair, because you spent XP and built a perk around that, and that's like, in your case, that's the main concept that your character is built around. And if we take that away, then, you know, we've just nerfed you really hard, and that's not fair. That's not the intent of the card.
No, like I said, it's like a temporary one.
Yeah, I like the temporary nature. Yeah.
So we will get to the very last card that we'll do for this episode, number 10, Rage. Play on any character with cyberware or occult tech. She suffers an outburst of cyberpsychosis for the remainder of the scene. She adds 1 BD to damage results, but on a mishap, a random target is hit instead. Alternately, discard this card and draw a new one. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on Rage?
Surprisingly good card, actually, because when you see it and it's like a cyberpsychosis thing, you think, oh, this is going to hose me. But really, it's just letting you do extra damage. And if you mishap, well, this will get into those arguments again, but about if you disconnect, did it happen? Do I still hit someone randomly? you know, but a random target is also not necessarily always going to be a friendly target if you're wading through a bunch of carte de grace. You know, you're probably still going to hit one of them. And it gives you the option to discard it for a new one if you want. So even if you do have cyberware occult tech characters, you might still not want to use it and discard it and get something else. And you don't have to do it when it was drawn right away as well. So you can hang on to it for a while and be like, you know what? I don't think this combat is where we're going here. So let's swap it out. So I actually like this one. Whether it works on gene mods or not is a question, but I presume not.
I would say probably not.
Mark,
your thoughts on Rage?
Yay, cyberpsychosis makes an appearance. Hooray. Yeah, I like the fact that this gets both cyberware and occult tech by rule. I think there needs to be more of that in the cyber papacy card stuff and in the rule set talking about cyberware in general, just because that's the they're the two highest, they're kissing cousins essentially. And in my opinion, occult tech ought to be everything that happens to cyberware with very few exceptions, can happen to occult tech and vice versa. And it, to me, is the rule of two blending in the game, and it ought to be interwoven more. And at any rate, the reward here is not possibilities, but you've just juiced up, you know, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. You know, and now Hulk smash from whoever happens to have that cyber arm. or whatever. It doesn't say that it's a melee thing, right? So it's my
your cyber ham goes crazy.
My cyber ham goes crazy, or my cyber eye happens to really zero in real well, and I'm just, you know, shooting even better, hitting more vital places, blah blah blah. So that's fantastic. And again, as Jay pointed out, the mishap, did the attack really happen? Well, maybe it does because the cards played this time, whereas it wouldn't normally. You know, it's...
And, well, mishaps don't mean disconnect. And if you're with the Cyber Papacy correct. Card, you're at Tech 26, and if you have that, then you're probably from, a, you know... Not probably. Always, probably. Probably from cyberpunk.
Probably, not always, but you're correct, probably, but there's edge cases.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're not talking about edge cases here. So random targets are not always bad. As Jay pointed out, it's random. So you could hit, you know, a different Cardigus, or you could hit... It's not good either, because you might have been like, I really need to degrade the big boss, and so I'm the heavy hitter and I'm going at the big boss, and now I'm shooting this one mook and I just obliterate this one mook, whereas I needed to do four wounds to the boss and I vaporized the street beater over here or whatever. So that's still bad, but keep in mind, you get to make the decision on what the random target is. So it could be a power supply that's really important. It could be the computer you're trying to get data out of. It could be a node. It could be a camera. It could be, you know, knocking down a street light that suddenly makes it more difficult to run those chases or get away or whatever. So you could add whatever targets you want in there as the GM and you know, randomly roll your die and say, well, it could hit this or these guys over here. And you roll, oh, look, it did this thing over here. So it could be fun.
As much as our group, and Mark, you know this, loves messing with each other, one of our players had this card and asked, hey, does anybody have cyberware? And a couple of us were like, yes. And then after discussion, it was chosen to discard and draw. Because of that, you might hit one of us, which never has stopped that group from ever trap cards every time.
Play, oh, all day.
Play all day, every day. It actually shocked me that the player didn't play that. But no, I...
You know why I think it was? Because everybody was low on resources, and nobody... And was like, well, normally you'd be like, well, yeah, I'll just soak. And whatever, or Graggle bodyguard, but everybody was low on resources and knew that some stuff was coming, and nobody wanted to have to deal with that just in case. Because those of you who are going to get taken out with this, like Pierre's the heavy hitter, you hit really, really hard. Boria hits really, really hard, and nobody wants to get hit really, really hard.
But no, I like it. When we get to Tharkold, we will talk about the Tharkold version of this card, as well as another card that is similar, but I don't like it as much. But we'll leave that for that future episode. Having said that, that is all the 1 through 10 cards. Next episode, we will deal with 11 through 20. And... we again wish or would like to hear from you. Email us at torgdcd@gmail.com. We will read your emails. We will answer questions. We'll read your comments. Comment back on those. And until next time, we hope you have fun in your own Cosmverse. Bye.